inspiring interviews with today's top landlords. This is the Rental Income Podcast. And now, Dan Lane.
My guest on the podcast today has a great story about how his first two rental properties really changed the entire trajectory of not just his investing career, but also his life. He's got a really great story. He lives in Indianapolis, and he owns rentals that he self-manages there locally. But he also owns properties in California that he self-manages remotely. So there's a lot I want to talk to him about today and find out exactly how he's running everything and how he makes everything work. So let's take a real quick break. We'll thank our sponsors. We'll come right back and we'll meet Peter Stewart.
Would you like to know the easiest way to create wealth and passive income with real estate? This is Marco Santarelli with Norada Real Estate Investments. Now you can access the best deals without the stress or hassle of having to find, renovate, or manage those properties. We save you time by providing you with passive income investment properties in some of the best U.S. markets. Learn more by downloading your free copy of The Ultimate Guide to Passive Real Estate Investing. There's no obligation and nothing to buy. Simply visit PassiveRealEstateGuide.com and get your free copy today. That's PassiveRealEstateGuide.com.
The first step in buying a rental property is to get pre-qualified, and I would suggest you work with a lender that specializes in working with investors, because the last thing you want to have happen is to get to closing and find out the money's not there and you can't close. The lender that I recommend is Chaley Ridge from Ridge Lending Group. She's a nationwide lender, and she'll pre-qualify you for free if you mention Rental Income Podcast. Find out more today. Contact Chaley at ridgelendinggroup.com. That's R-I-D-G-E, lendinggroup.com. NMLS 42056. Hey, Peter, welcome to the podcast. So why don't we start with you telling us just a little bit about yourself so the audience can get to know you a little bit better.
So I actually didn't buy my first primary residence until many years down the road, but I started with investment properties first. And I know some people have kind of a mindset of they need to buy their own home first, but I did the opposite, and luckily it worked out very well for me. The agent that kind of mentored me and that I ended up partnering with and building a team with, Richard Shulman, who's one of the top agents out in the LA area, he had started buying some rental properties, and I've always had kind of an entrepreneurial, you know, business type mind. And I've always appreciated the opportunities real estate affords people. I've got family that is in real estate as well. My grandfather was the president of the Indianapolis Board of Realtors for some time. So I've sort of seen that become a wealth generator. My grandfather owned apartment buildings too, you know, many, many years ago. So that's kind of always been in the back of my mind. But when I first started out in the business, it was far from it. But what really got me into it was all my clientele. I worked with clients. Also, I was in Los Angeles at the time, and I work with clients from all over the world. In pretty much every continent, I've sold a property to someone. So I saw all these people coming in and buying all these properties, and it just sort of piqued my interest. You know, what are these wealthy people doing? Right. And, you know, it's not reinventing the wheel. It's just sort of modeling. So I saw what they were doing, got the bug, you know, that I should be investing and following their lead. And I did just that.
Now, when you bought your first rental, like, so you were renting yourself and you decided to buy a property to rent out, did you consider moving into it and making that your home, or were you just more focused on trying to build out a rental portfolio?
This was a strict rental. It was in a decent area, but not in an area that I would want to have lived personally.
Okay.
So yeah, I never attempted to live there myself, and it was cheap enough to where I didn't really need to do a house hack to get a low down payment loan. It wasn't that expensive of a property to begin with, so it just made more sense to keep it as a strict investment.
Right. Okay. So you bought two rentals while you were living in Los Angeles, and then you moved to Indianapolis. Did you think about selling those properties when you moved, or I imagine that the whole dynamic changed because you were self-managing these properties as you were living close by. But when you moved all the way to Indiana, did it become more difficult to manage the properties?
Great question. And I was definitely concerned about that. When we moved, I had no intent of selling them. For me, the buy and holds are very long-term plays. You know, it's my retirement fund, basically. At least at the time, that was the intent. And they were both generating really nice cash flow. They're also both condos. So the maintenance aspect is much less than a single family home, you know, because HOAs maintain the exterior of the building. And I had remodeled both of these on the inside, you know, new appliances, flooring, paint, things like that. So it's very minimal maintenance. And I had, at the time I had left, both tenants in the properties were my original tenants, and they both had been there for several years. So I kind of just was playing it by ear and going to, you know, at the time, decided to attempt to self-manage both properties from afar. Yeah, I did watch the market take a huge jump up. So I knew they were worth a lot more when we were leaving LA. But again, they were producing such great cash flow. I really had no intent of selling them. And kind of the thought was, I'm going to try managing from afar. If it becomes too difficult, I did have a relationship with a property management company that I basically had, you know, on standby ready to jump in if it was too much for me. And I also had my old real estate team was still on the ground, and I had a lot of friends there. So worst case, if there was an emergency, I probably could have had some boots on the ground to help me out if needed.
What I think is awesome about these two properties is you bought these properties for cash flow, right? That was your initial purchase. But you ended up getting a ton of appreciation just with the market appreciation. Tell me how that worked out for you.
I can attribute that to kickstarting my whole kind of investment career and setting my, you know, trajectory in a different direction, because they appreciated very nicely. I got them cheap to begin with. Well, the first one was an REO. The second one was a short sale. So they were dirt cheap. And, you know, I kind of had a feeling they were going to appreciate eventually. The first property I bought actually used to be owned by an agent that was at my office at the time, who has since gone on to be like a celebrity agent, you know, multimillionaire, just totally crushing it. But he had owned that property prior, and I want to say he paid $350 for it at the peak of the market, and I bought it for $115. So I just immediately, just in the very beginning, saw, okay, I'm buying something that's way undervalued here. So I had a feeling long term, you know, values were going to correct themselves, and I bought in Northern Inglewood, which is right by Culver City. They put recently they have the new stadium going in. So I saw a lot of things in the works that were going to change that area. So it was strategic to a degree. I mean, you know, you never want to bet on appreciation, but in the back of my mind, I knew that was going to be a piece of the puzzle eventually. But yeah, I mean, they went from, I mean, I bought that first one for $115,000, put $15,000 into it. And I could probably sell it today without having to put a dime into it for $400,000.
Wow, so yeah, that is
incredible. The same one was the other way. Yeah, ridiculous.
Yeah.
The other property I bought for $70,000, put $15,000 into it as well to clean it up. And I just sold that for $430,000 at the end of last year.
I mean, that is life-changing money. Like, that is really, really incredible. Now, with sitting on that much equity, do you ever think about selling and taking that money and buying properties that, you know, it's like you could, that's like your seed money to build a huge portfolio. Like, do you ever think about doing that?
Yeah. That's exactly right. So that was the biggest benefit to that appreciation, is I had that equity locked in there, and they were cash flowing well, so no reason to sell them, but I tapped into that equity with HELOCs. And that's really been my key for purchasing additional properties and making moves, is utilizing those HELOCs. I got big HELOCs on both of them. Again, I only have one now, but, you know, years previous, I did have HELOCs on both of those properties, pretty sizable HELOCs that allowed me to buy. When we moved back to Indianapolis, I used that for the down payment on our principal residence here. I was able to use it to help for a down payment on a 4-unit I bought here. I have definitely tapped into that, and I still have a HELOC in place on my one California property that is going to go into the next one I buy. I'm just basically in a, you know, holding pattern, waiting for the right property to come up, and then I've got the funds available so I can use it. So yeah, the HELOCs, because of the appreciation, have been instrumental to my business and where I am today.
Now, all right, so tell me now what you've done. So you left California, you moved to Indianapolis. Tell me, like, what you did with that, like, how you used that equity to help you buy some properties in Indianapolis.
So we bought our principal residence there to have a place to go to when we moved to Indy. So that was a little bit of the HELOC. In 2016, I used that money, or some of one of the HELOCs, to buy a fourplex in Carmel, which is where I live. A smoking deal fell into my lap, essentially, and I pounced right on it. So I was able to get the four unit with that. And I've also, in 2017, bought a property and flipped that and made a six-figure profit on that property. So it's been, again, kind of not to repeat myself, but that the HELOC money, just having that, those funds in place have been instrumental.
And absolutely,
being able, you know, to me to make some moves. So yeah, purchase property, renovate property, because I have the complete control. I don't have to go through, you know, all the financing hoops. I don't have to pay points to a hard money lender, none of that stuff. You know, once you get the HELOC set up, it's basically, I don't say play money, but
it's almost, it's like cash
in the bank.
Right. So are you using the HELOC to buy the properties outright, or are you using it for a down payment to get a loan?
So the four unit was just a down payment. So, you know, the 2 to 4 units is 25% down versus 20% down for non-owner occupied. So the four units I bought for $220,000. So you know, 50,000 or whatever, that was 50, 60,000 down. So yeah, that was all the HELOC money there. And then I used a little bit of that money to clean it, you know, do a couple of minor repairs on the property as well. And then subsequently, as tenants have moved out, because this property, it needed some work. So I've updated some of the units as well.
Okay.
And then with the flip, we bought that property outright with some savings and some HELOC, and then used some personal money to finance the, or to do the renovations. And then once it's sold, I just paid everything back.
Okay.
So it's basically zero out the HELOC for the next one.
Right. So now what are you looking for when you're looking for rentals? Like what are you looking for? Like what's a perfect deal for you?
So of course this answer varies for everyone. You know, everyone's investment strategy is different. As a broker, I work with a lot of investors. So, you know, what my clients buy typically is a little different than what I purchase for myself, but you know, that's the beauty of this business, that everyone can do it differently and still make a lot of money.
So many ways to make money.
Yeah, I'm long-term buy and holds.
Okay.
Mainly that is my main strategy. I want to get into apartment buildings. So I'm sort of gradually working my way up larger and larger buildings to get there. So that's what I want. I want passive income. I don't want to work forever. So my goal is to buy as many rentals as I can. I have a goal of 100 in the next 100 doors in the next 5 years. And what I've calculated based on kind of averages, what I think I can get per door, that'll set me up to where I really don't have to work after that. I mean, sure. I still will continue to work just as my nature, but, so that's my plan. I like to buy in A and B areas. I don't want to say I don't have the stomach for the C and D areas. That the majority of my clients buy in the C areas, because that's where I think it's the sweet spot balance of risk and reward. It's just not for me.
Right.
I prefer a nicer area, better quality tenant, higher chance of appreciation long term, more stable renters, less vacancies, things like that. And I'm okay taking a lesser return for that.
Yeah, I'm 100% on board with you. Those C-class properties can be a lot more profitable, but there is a lot more work and a lot less hassle, or a lot more hassle with those properties. So is it hard to find properties right now? I know Indianapolis is known as a good cash flow market. Is it difficult in the market today to find what you're looking for?
For me, yes, absolutely. I'm kind of looking for the needles in a haystack. So several reasons behind that. One, Indianapolis. So I've been back since 2014. So in those 4.5+ years, we've experienced very high buyer demand and very low inventory. And it's been that way for years now. So, you know, a lot of buyers, a lot of demand, but just not a lot to choose from, especially in the nicer areas. So yeah, it's tough. I mean, I found a duplex in an A area last year that I bought. I bought that four unit in 2016. So, you know, every couple of years something pops up. But if I look right now, just if I were to search on MLS, you know, looking for properties in A and B areas, there's probably less than 50. There's probably less than 20 decent, you know, just even okay deals in those areas. So inventory is very low.
Right.
The majority you're going to see is C and a lot of the D area stuff that's just thrashed, you know, $30,000-$40,000 properties that need basically to be gutted. That, or you're going to have a tenant who probably, you know, paid $400 in rent and will most likely be a poor quality tenant.
So give me,
it's very challenging.
So give me some numbers. Like, so say for, like for an A class property, the kind of stuff that you're looking for, like what kind of price range in Indianapolis would you be looking at, and what kind of rents would you be getting?
Sure. So I'll touch on one point. So one of the challenges with Indianapolis, when you get into those nicer areas, is that rents don't keep up with prices. So prime example, you can buy a $50,000 house in a CD area, probably get $700 in rent.
Okay.
You buy a $300,000 house in an A area, you're probably getting $1,800, maybe $2,000 in rent.
Okay.
So there's this tipping point to where it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But I'll give you some real numbers. So
okay.
The duplex I bought last year was in an area called Meridian Kessler, north side of Indianapolis, solid A area. And it's right next to an area called Broad Ripple, which is like the hot, hip, younger crowd, all the bars and things like that. And it's walking distance right to there, in blocks from that area. So prime area. I paid $305 for the duplex. It was an all brick duplex, both sides with 3-bed, 1.5 baths, 1,500 square feet with a full basement. Unfinished basement on, I think it was about maybe a third of an acre with a detached garage. So everything that renters want, you know, again, it was all brick, in okay shape. It was an estate, so it had been in some family for many, many years. Decent shape, it needed some updating. So I bought it for $305. I put about $30,000 into it. So let's just say I'm all into it for $340. And each side rents for $1,560. So
okay.
A little over $3,100. So $340 to $3,100. I'm slightly under that 1%. You know, maybe I'm about 0.9% or so. But again, it's, you know, I rented both sides in less than 2 weeks. Top-notch tenants. And they're probably going to be staying there long-term as well.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of numbers you can expect. Like my 4-unit in Carmel, again, that was a smoking deal. But I paid $220 for it. And if there's anything else to come out for $220 now, obviously I'd hop on it in 2 seconds. So these numbers are realistic, but not practical in today's market,
right?
Just because you can't find anything at that price.
So just to summarize, so you can't buy a single family and meet the 1% rule in A class, but you can buy a duplex or a fourplex and meet the 1% rule.
It's right. It's still tough.
Okay.
Yes. And obviously if you can get 3 or 4 units, your chances are much better, but still
yeah.
Very tough. So I see them all the time in these not all the time, but when they come up, you know, I'll see something that'll be I'll give you an example. I'll see something that's maybe priced at $250,000, but it's getting $950 or $1,000 in rent for each side.
Okay.
So you know, you're probably like 0.6 or 0.5. Just,
yeah.
It stops making sense, especially if you're not self-managing. You know, you do the real numbers where you're accounting for CapEx, vacancy, repairs, things like that. You're going to be losing money every
yeah,
month, basically,
right,
in your numbers.
Totally.
So,
totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
In single family, yeah, absolutely makes no sense in A areas. In the B, like B minus areas, it can make sense. But again, it's few and far between there.
Right. Now, a big part of what you do is working with investors. So if someone is maybe in another part of the country and they're interested in investing in Indianapolis, tell me how you can work with them. Being someone that's out of town, like how would you work with a client, virtually, I guess online?
That's a great question. Cause it's a common one too, especially for Indianapolis, where I've noticed just change in the past couple of years. So many more eyeballs from out of state are getting, I get inquiries from all over the country now, whereas 3 years ago it was, you know, maybe a California investor here and there, but a lot more people talking about Indianapolis. So number one is providing them all the information, you know, rental comps, sales comps, make sure the property is priced appropriately, send them all the rental comps, go visit the property myself. I'll do a virtual walkthrough with them sometimes on FaceTime, or I'll take a video and, you know, video the property, giving my notes as I'm walking through it. Then I'll send it to them, say, okay, here's the property. I think it's going to need this much in work. Here's probably what it rents for. Here's what I would suggest offering, you know, and then I let them, you know, give them all the data they can so then they can make an informed decision. But I understand that going off just, you know, a couple pictures in the MLS and a quick description, you can't make an informed decision on an investment that way. So again, my goal is really to provide them all the information that they need to be able to make that proper decision and guide them with my local knowledge as
yeah.
well.
If you're interested in learning more about Indianapolis or you want to invest out there, Peter would be a great resource for you. I've got his contact information on the website. You can find it at rentalincomepodcast.com.
/episode211. And before you buy your next rental property, you're going to need financing. And the lender that I recommend is Chaley Ridge from Ridge Lending Group. She specializes in working with investors, whether you're brand new, looking to buy your first rental property, or you've got a big portfolio. She has different loan programs that can help you with whatever situation you're in. I would definitely recommend reaching out to her. She's got a special offer just for our listeners. If you mention Rental Income Podcast, she will waive all of the pre-qualification fees. You can find out more and get started today at ridgelendinggroup.com. That's R-I-D-G-E, lendinggroup.com, NMLS 42056. I also want to thank our friends over at AutoSlash for making today's episode possible. I've used AutoSlash to make a car reservation, and they saved me a bunch of money, and I know that they can save you money too. The way AutoSlash works is that when you book your car reservation at AutoSlash.com, they'll search the internet and find every available promo code to make sure that you're getting the lowest rate possible on your car rental. After you've made your reservation, you can put it on their tracker, and they'll continue to search the internet. And if they find a better deal, a better promo code, or maybe some kind of flash sale, they'll email you. You can cancel that first reservation and rebook at the new lower price. Their average user saves 30% off the rate that they can find on any other car rental site. And the best part about it, it's completely free. There's absolutely no charge at all to use AutoSlash. You can try it out today. Just go to autoslash.com. That's AutoSlash, autoslash.com. Again, that's autoslash.com. Thank you so much for listening and subscribing to the podcast. If this is your first time here, make sure you subscribe and you'll get a new episode delivered to you automatically every single Tuesday. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.
You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcast-free today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcast-free.